You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Hello, and welcome to this podcast, addressing the need for novel therapies for post-COVID conditions, enhancing understanding, diagnosis, assessment, management, and research in long COVID. In this episode, we discuss the management of long COVID symptoms. My name is Deb Gordon, and I'm thrilled to host today's podcast. I'm joined by Dr. David Petrino, Director of Rehabilitation Innovation at Mount Sinai Health System in New York City, and Professor of Rehabilitation and Human Performance at the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai. Welcome, Dr. Petrino.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
So let's start with where we are today in terms of defining long COVID.
Yeah, absolutely. So we typically define long COVID as anybody who has survived an acute COVID infection, who 3 months after that acute COVID infection are still experiencing symptoms that make them feel worse than where they were at their pre-COVID baseline. So anybody who's still not feeling fully recovered 3 months after their acute COVID infection, we consider to have long COVID.
And how prevalent is it? What are the numbers looking like?
So, you know, the current CDC household pulse estimates of long COVID prevalence tell us that around 5% of the US population are currently living with long COVID. And the most recent reviews on the topic would tell us that every time you sustain and survive an acute COVID infection, there is an 8 to 12% chance that you may go on to develop long COVID.
Does that risk increase based on the number of infections you experience? So if I'm on my third COVID infection, is my risk higher then?
Yes. So there have been only a few studies on reinfection and risk of long COVID, but probably the largest study on this topic was performed by Ziad Al-Ali from the VA. And he showed that, yes, with every reinfection, you have an increased chance of going on to develop long COVID symptoms.
So here's a trick question. What does long COVID look like? What are the most common symptoms?
Yeah, so, you know, long COVID can present in many different ways. And we've seen over 3,000 cases of long COVID in our clinic, and the variability is staggering in terms of the different ways that people will present. Invariably, there are a few symptoms that are very common with long COVID. And so of all of the patients that we've seen, roughly 90% of patients will present with fatigue, meaning just an extreme heavy tiredness that they can't seem to shake no matter how much they rest. 90% of patients will present with post-exertional malaise, meaning if they exert themselves, they're able to exert themselves in the moment, but they pay for it afterwards with a worsening of their symptoms. And this is sometimes called crashing by patients with long COVID, where they're able to do the thing in the moment, but then afterwards they really pay for it for days and weeks after. And a large proportion of our patients also experience cognitive impairments. So an inability to remember small details through the day, inability to sort of find their way around their house or, you know, their neighborhood, issues with short and long-term memory, issues with speech and word finding, very troubling cognitive symptoms that affect people's ability to function day to day. Beyond that, we have over 300 symptoms that have been documented associated with long COVID that range from, pain throughout the entire body, headaches, difficulty regulating your temperature, difficulty tolerating upright positions, dizziness, nausea, significant GI symptoms, significant hormonal issues and issues with menstruation, hair loss, you name it, every organ system is affected, and everyone's long COVID symptoms tend to look a little bit different.
I want to go back to the fatigue, because that's such a loaded word, you know, to the uninitiated, it's like, oh, they're just tired. How do your patients describe their fatigue to you? Any anecdotes?
I really agree with what you just said there. It's often, you know, we hear the word fatigue and we think, well, you know, I've pulled an all-nighter before, or I've, you know, I know what it, I'm tired all the time. What are you talking about? Well, you know, this fatigue is kind of a different animal. We you know, our patients will talk to us about feeling drugged. Our patients will talk to us about feeling narcoleptic, like they can't wake themselves up out of you know, this heavy sleep or this heavy, you know, blanket of fatigue that is covering them. And, you know, interestingly, in some of our publications, we showed that many individuals with long COVID have extremely low morning cortisol. Cortisol is a hormone that actually wakes us up. So what typically happens to us in the morning is our cortisol peaks, and that is actually what signals our brain to say, hey, wake up from your sleep. Cortisol is what wakes us up. What we were seeing in these folks with long COVID and severe fatigue is their body doesn't do that. It doesn't release cortisol to sort of bring them into this, you know, alert morning state. So what this tells us is that when someone with long COVID tells you that they have fatigue, what they're telling you is that their body, from a chemical and a physiological standpoint, is not doing what it needs to do to have them in a wakeful state. And when we measure their fatigue using well-validated scales, such as the fatigue severity scale, we see scores that we're used to seeing in folks with traumatic brain injury that have disorders of consciousness. So very, very severe fatigue is a different animal entirely to, you know, what those of us who, you know, stay up late at night or didn't get a good night's sleep would experience.
Wow, that's just, I think that's a very valuable explanation. Most of our listeners are primary care clinicians. And so most patients will typically present to them. And we know from some studies and from what you hear from your patients, they often wind up going on a merry-go-round of doctor visits. So what would you tell our listeners that they should be asking to really drill down and see if this patient has long COVID?
Yeah, you know, I think the first thing is just believe your patient. You know, when somebody comes to you and says, I got sick with COVID and I just haven't been able to shake it. I can't seem to, you know, get back to my old life. That is how the majority of long COVID patients will present. You know, that they're usually initially at the beginning of their disease, not so worried about it, but they're just saying, look, you know, I really can't seem to shake this thing. It's knocking me around. I'm just dragging, you know, I'm not able to work like I used to. I'm not able to go to the gym. As a PCP, at that point, you know, you should be starting to think long COVID. You should be starting to think about providing them with advice regarding energy conservation and pacing. You should be starting to think, okay, what tests should I be running? And really starting to come up with a plan for assessment assessment and intervention for the patient. But as it pertains to diagnosis should be super simple for you. If someone has had an acute infection, and let's be clear, confirmed or presumed, the CDC does not require, you know, a PCR test or an antibody test to prove that this person had an acute COVID infection. If you hear about their acute infection, you say, wow, that sounds like COVID. And now 3 months later, 4 months later, they're telling you, I can't get out of bed. I'm, you know, struggling with work. I feel like I'm going to lose my job. Diagnosis should be simple. That they're meeting the CDC diagnostic criteria for long COVID right there. You don't need any blood tests. You don't need any functional testing. The CDC actually recommends you make the diagnosis on a subjective basis. So follow your instincts with diagnosis, and it's quite simple.
Excellent answer. All right, I've diagnosed my patient. What do I do about it? What treatments are we starting to see? I know we don't have set guidelines yet, but what what can we do? Especially those clinicians who are in the community, you know, you have this wonderful clinic, but there aren't that many around. So most of these patients are going to be treated by community physicians.
I think it's important to state that we do not have approved treatments for long COVID at this time, but we do have guidelines for treatment. You know, so for instance, AAPMR, the American Association of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation, released consensus guidelines that were developed in collaboration with patients and multidisciplinary teams of physicians on how to address some of the most prominent distinct symptoms of long COVID: fatigue, post-exertional malaise, cardiovascular dysfunction, autonomic dysfunction, and so on and so forth. And so, you know, the advice that I tend to give when it comes to treating long COVID is, it's a very real thing to say that when you've seen one case of long COVID, you've seen one case of long COVID. So first things first, get a catalog of symptoms. You know, try and understand what symptoms people are experiencing, and go beyond just asking about the symptoms and writing down the symptoms. The NIH, published a list of patient-reported outcomes that are very good and well-validated for measuring distinct symptoms. You know, I mentioned one earlier for fatigue. We use the fatigue severity scale. For post-exertional malaise, there is a questionnaire called the, DePaul post-exertional malaise screener. For cognitive impairment, we can use a questionnaire called the NeuroQol. So for each symptom that somebody tells you about, use a patient-reported outcome to measure it. You know, don't just write down patient complaints of fatigue, because from the very outset, when someone's telling you I'm fatigued, what should be going through your mind is, okay, well, how fatigued are you? How serious is this? How severe is it? And how will I know if one of my treatments is making it better? And that's why it's really important to document with patient-reported outcomes. And then, measure what you can. So for instance, autonomic dysfunction, we often think of as a very niche specialty, thing to assess. You need, a tilt table and you need all sorts of fancy equipment. Well, actually, there's a test called the NASA lean test, where you ask your patient to lean against a wall for 10 minutes. And in the majority of patients who come through our clinic, they fail the NASA lean test. We're able to diagnose dysautonomia just by measuring their heart rate and their blood pressure as they're leaning against the wall. Treatment begins with understanding where the problems are, because, so let's talk about fatigue. You can have fatigue because of autonomic dysfunction and POTS. You can have fatigue because you have mitochondrial dysfunction. You can have fatigue because you have endotheliitis. There are many reasons why people can present with fatigue. So a detailed assessment is very important for understanding, okay, well, what is linking this to fatigue? Now, in terms of treatment, there are many treatments for fatigue. So, if we've established guidelines for these. Now, if the first thing that we try to do with fatigue and post-exertional malaise is give people management strategies to avoid making it worse. What we know is that trying to exercise your way out of fatigue or post-exertional symptoms makes things worse. So we instead provide people with energy conservation strategies. Pacing is a very well-validated way of helping people with post-exertional malaise and fatigue manage it in such a way that their symptoms don't get worse. So pacing is one of the things that we discuss with our patients almost immediately, first thing through the door when they're reporting fatigue and post-exertional malaise. We then, if we identify dysautonomia, we then get people started on breathwork protocols, because we've been able to show that folks who have dysautonomia typically are experiencing low levels of carbon dioxide in their body, as well as as well as overactive sympathetic nervous system. So working with breathwork coaches or even just doing parasympathetic breathing on their own has been a good way of helping stabilize symptoms before moving into autonomic rehabilitation, which is a very specialized form of rehabilitation for the autonomic nervous system. Not everybody has dysautonomia. Some people have mitochondrial dysfunction, and there are a number of mitochondrial supplements that have now, you know, placebo-controlled, peer-reviewed data to suggest that they can help in folks with long COVID. These are things like alpha-lipoic acid, CoQ10, nicotinamide riboside. These are all compounds that have specific evidence related to long COVID to show that, you know, they can improve fatigue in people with long COVID if mitochondrial dysfunction is suspected. So I know I'm being a little bit long-winded here, but it's a very unfortunate thing that we try to sort of say what's the one cure for long COVID. It's a poorly characterized illness, meaning, you know, as we've said multiple times now, when someone comes through the door with long COVID, 300 symptoms, every organ system, and that's because, you know, we made an umbrella term to say anyone who is still unwell after their acute COVID infection has long COVID. So now what we need to do is pull this apart. Okay, which symptoms do you have? What are the physiological things that I think are driving your symptoms? And then how do we treat?
Just one final question before we run out of time. What are you seeing now that you've been treating these patients for years? What kind of outcomes are you starting to see?
Our aggregate outcomes, you know, from the clinic really will show us that if someone attends our clinic for 3 months, on average, the outcomes they can expect is they can expect a halving of their fatigue, a doubling of their activity tolerance, and around a 60% reduction in the total number of symptoms that they're reporting. So what's, you know, let's unpack that a little bit. It's a great improvement. So people do improve quite a bit on average when they come to our clinic. But it's also important to note that most people are not walking away from our clinic saying, I'm totally cured, my symptoms are over. What we're able to do right now is manage long COVID symptoms and help by decreasing the severity. Our research and our future approaches are focusing on treatments and interventions that we hope will cure long COVID, but that is, you know, years into the future. We still only have management strategies at this time.
Are you and other experts using any existing medications off-label to see if they're helping, or seeing any research to see if that they're effective in long COVID? I know there's been some research looking at Paxlovid and other antivirals.
Yeah, we always need to follow the evidence and make sure that, you know, we're doing no harm when it comes to experimenting with medications. So we still follow randomized controlled trial data before we prescribe medications. And so, you know, in the future, we ourselves are trialing a lot of different antivirals, which we hope to be able to have results on in the next 12 to 18 months. But when it comes to medications, we do prescribe a lot of medications for POTS and dysautonomia to manage blood pressure and heart rate in the ways that we would like it based on the presentations of the patients who are coming to us. When we suspect neuroinflammation, low-dose naltrexone and low-dose aripiprazole can be very effective in addressing those. And there has been good peer-reviewed evidence showing that these medications can help. And then based on literature, folks with long COVID often experience what's called mast cell activation syndrome. And so they're releasing a lot of histamine, their mast cells are degranulating, and they respond quite well to H1 and H2 blockers, so antihistamines. And so prescription of antihistamines can often really make a difference in a patient's overall symptom burden. And we follow the evidence. You know, famotidine tends to be the first, you know, one of the first line antihistamines because There are placebo-controlled, randomized controlled trial data to show us that it helps in folks with long COVID. So, you know, we're always following the literature, and there are medications out there that are worth a try in your patients if you suspect MCAS or POTS or, you know, neuroinflammation. These are things that can help.
And that's all the time we have today. Thank you so much, Dr. Petrino, for this very insightful conversation. And thanks to our listeners for joining us. We hope you'll listen to the other episode from this series. This podcast was brought to you by MedLearning Group. MedLearning Group is accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education to provide CME for physicians. This CME activity was planned and produced in accordance with the ACCME Essentials. And I want to give a special thank you to Pfizer, which provided an educational grant for this activity.